Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the bright, witty, urbane world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
Hey, Ben. This week we're taking a look at Season 6, Episode 3, The Bye-Bye Sky High IQ Murder Case. This episode stars Austrian-American actor Theodore Bickel as a member of a... It's Bickel. I did look this up. It's Theodore Bickel as a member of a Mensa-like organization who constructs an elaborate Rube Goldberg murder contraption to cover up his embezzling. Bickel appeared in dozens of productions over his career from the screen to the stage. He was the original Captain Von Trapp in the Broadway play that preceded the film The Sound of Music. And he also had roles in The Defiant Ones, My Fair Lady, The African Queen, and he was Worf's dad. Also appearing in this episode, Roshenko. Also appearing in this episode is frequent Mel Brooks collaborator Kenneth Mars and returning guest star Sorrel Brooke as a murder victim who just 2 years later would portray his most memorable role, Boss Hogg, on The Dukes of Hazzard.
Holy shit.
And the easiest to spot cameo is by a young Jamie Lee Curtis, who appears briefly as a waitress.
Now, this is the angriest waitress ever.
The angriest. She hates Columbo so much. This was the last episode aired of the original 1970s run, and as such, it is the dividing line between the classic Columbo and the rest of it.
Oh,
fuck. So the next episode will be in the 80s. Well, reboot is the wrong word, but sort of... the new series. You didn't know it was going to happen so fast, did you?
No. Well, I mean, in fairness, this is what, 40?
This is somewhere in
there. This is episode 40.
Something like that.
And it's 69 in total. But yeah, you're right in that I should have known there was a turn like that coming. You bastard.
Yeah.
You kept this from me.
I'm actually incorrect.
Nope,
I'm wrong. Never mind.
Yay!
Forget what I just said.
Hooray! Mac made a mistake.
Yeah, that never happens. I'm sure I won't get an email about it. the next season is the last season in the 70s series.
Oh, okay.
Okay, this was just the last one of this season.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Oops.
Whoopsie doodle.
Maybe I should re-record the whole intro now. Forget it.
Nah. That's fine.
That's for people who care about the information they're giving. At least we caught it before the end of the episode, but I'm still probably going to get a couple tweets about it. You know who you are. This is a great episode, I thought. It's a strong performance.
It's a really strong. He's a really, really strong villain.
Yes. Like, very good.
Also immediately unlikable for
a number of reasons.
Tickling without consent multiple times.
That's true.
Like, it's super not okay.
It's kind of an awkward episode on a lot of levels.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody is being very strange to everyone else.
There's a bunch of weird 70s shit in it, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, that's true.
But he's a very good killer.
Yes.
And by that, I mean he's intelligent, he's witty, and he unravels.
Yes, he has a very good sort of boisterous style. He's very outgoing. I mentioned while we were watching it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that this guy has played the role of Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway more times than any other actor. 2,000 times on stage was a lot.
That's a very long time to be in one role.
He has a very Fiddler on the Roof sort of energy about him.
Well, it's definitely that kind of boisterous sort of like stage projection kind of vibe.
For sure.
But it's great because it also gives him so much room to sort of fall apart, which he does. And it's so good.
It's very good. And also, like, he's the kind of guy who you want to be opposite Columbo.
Yeah.
Because you want somebody who's this bigger, larger than life character.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really lends to him sort of going slowly crazy.
Yeah. It works really well because there are those times where, like, he's all like, oh, blah, 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 and my smart club, and you can blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and he's like showing off and,
those are all verbatim lines.
That's exactly how he talks. I know. I nailed
it.
But just like when he presents Columbo with the like puzzle to solve.
Yes.
His little riddle, and Columbo claps back with like, "I have a riddle for you," and it's basically about
you dumbass
murder.
Yeah,
it's so good though.
So the murder is done So there's kind of the Rube Goldberg thing that I talked about in the intro is actually not how the murder takes place, but it's how the cover up takes place.
Right.
So
yeah, the murder is actually pretty simple. Pretty simple. It's two bullets in the chest. Shot,
yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out that this guy Buddy, who is the partner of the main character, whose name is
Oliver Brandt, and then Brandt, it's Bertie
Hastings.
Yeah.
So Oliver has been embezzling.
Yep.
From wealthy clients.
Yep. Well, we find out later it's like wealthy widows
because they're an accountancy firm.
Right.
And so he's been skimming off the top, and Bertie has figured it out,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to expose Oliver because Oliver, as we mentioned before, tickles him
and is kind of a dick.
And it's just kind of a dick. Well, yeah. To everybody.
He's a dick to everybody, but he's a super dick to Bertie. And Bertie is clearly the kind of person who's just not really okay with that.
They went to high school together or something like that. They've been friends for way too long.
Yeah.
So Bertie is going to go to the cops. So Oliver shoots him twice.
Yep.
And then sets into motion this thing that he set up in the previous scene, which is he put two squibs, which if you're not familiar, are blanks, essentially, yep. that are gunshots. They use them in films to like place on something to make it blow up.
Yep.
And it also sounds like a gunshot, sort of. To fool somebody. And then he puts two of those in an umbrella, puts the umbrella into the flue.
Yep.
And then he rigs up a record player.
Yes, a turntable.
A turntable that's automatic so that he can press a button and it'll play a song and then it'll trigger something, and it's not clear exactly what he does.
Yeah, it's basically like it plays for 4 minutes, and then it picks up the arm and rocks back and then towards and forth, the and then, record and then sets itself down. Back down.
Yeah, kind of and he uses that its position.
To trigger the squibs, and also another thing, basically to knock a book over so that it sounds like a body hitting the floor.
Right. It's one of those great things that's so very physical. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, It's not something you could just imagine writing.
Yeah.
Like, this is very clearly the product of a writer who had one of these sets, who had a Victrola of this kind.
Right.
And who one day was playing it, and then it stopped, and it did this reset thing. And then he had, like, a thought, like, how would I do it? It's like, I love it because it's very real. Like, it's very physical.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, a sort of conceptual thing. Like, he very clearly went to the trouble of thinking about how you would
right.
do this.
Right. It's super cool because it makes you wonder, like, did they actually go and test this out?
I would have to assume,
you know,
yeah.
Like, because it's got that vibe of somebody went through the trouble of trying to make sure. Like, yeah, it's fiddly. It's, as you say, it's very Rube Goldberg. But it is a thing that,
and
like, kind of...
it feels physically possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I really liked about that, too, is that while they kind of show us set it up, they don't really show it activate.
Right. You don't and see so, it execute. And there are a couple steps that get left out of the setup.
Until
you,
the end,
you
basically.
You see him holding a pen, but you don't know what happened with the pen until the very end.
Right. And it's really, it's a really nice touch because it allows Columbo to keep it sort of inverted format while yeah. still adding a little mystery in the, like, you are also now trying to figure out, how did this thing work? That's yeah. kind of weird.
If I were to guess about the writing process, I would say that the writer had all of these things and then set them up in their office and was like doing it like,
yeah.
oh, would it trigger that? Like, maybe not with the squibs.
But well, no, that, but that just could, the idea of like, oh, it hit this and then it hit this. So
and then it would knock this pen over.
Right.
And then like they set up the pen and they set up a book that was up perched on a ledge and like they made it happen. And it's very satisfying when it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really, it's very cool. It's a really neat, I mean, as you say, it's very physical and it just, yeah, it makes it feel less TV, as weird as that sounds, yeah. for how ridiculous this murder is,
it's
or
silly.
The cover-up is. Yeah.
But it's not, like, it's not silly in the way that, like, Now You See Me or whatever, where they where the guy sets up a, or not Now You See Me, was it Now You See Him? That's what it was. Yeah, Now You See, Him with Jack Cassidy.
Yeah.
Where he sets up the shadow box, which is meant to be him moving around, but it's
right.
But it obviously doesn't look anything like that, so they just don't show it, but then they talk about it like it was that.
Yeah.
Like, this is this could physically happen.
Right.
This is real
The other thing is very much a TV conceit that we just roll with.
Right. So in that way, I really like that part of it. Now, the rest of the episode is weird.
Uh-huh.
There's definitely a lot of kind of meandering parts. Some parts I don't know.
It's sort of like there are B plots that don't necessarily go anywhere, like with the secretary. So basically after he kills Birdie, then he promotes his own secretary, and he then takes Birdie's secretary as his secretary, who is clearly pissed off about it. And then there's the whole, like, there's this amazing scene in a disco where one of the members of Sigma, which is, let's be clear, not Mensa, absolutely not Mensa in any way, but totally Mensa. This lady who...
Is she one of the members of Sigma?
Yeah.
No, this is just a random lady.
No.
I don't think this lady is...
Was that not...
this was not...
That's a different lady than the one
that
was at the...
Who was in the club. This is a completely different lady.
That's my mistake. It's just they both kind of had that same sort of high...
Sure.
Like, the sort... They both came across in the, like...
No, this was...
Airy, like...
So this is Susie.
No, you're right. Okay.
Was the actor who played that, or the character, and then there was Vivian Brandt was the Sigma character.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that, wow, that disco scene's
it's so
a
strange.
Lot.
So it starts in a disco, and you see the secretary sitting there
in a leather jacket, and like a whole, it's a very 70s outfit.
It's a very busy scene. There's a lot of like lights and people moving around. And then this woman just comes up and goes, "Hi, I'm Susie. I've tried TM,
Black Mass," and she just lists like every fad kind of thing from
yoga,
the 70s.
I've tried it all, but I still...
Hot yoga, goat yoga, you name it, I've done it. I mean,
then she says, "But I'm still a victim," or something like that, right?
It's so weird,
boy,
man.
I really wish that I had... Hold on, maybe I can find it in the quotes, because it's insane. Here we go. "I've tried Esalen, Primal Scream, Pyramid Power, Synanon, a Black Mass at San Francisco, Open Marriage, EST, TA, TM, I'm okay, you're okay, and I'm still a target." What are you talking about?
Yeah, I understand half of that.
I understand what these words mean. It's worth noting, there is no preamble to this. He does not ask her a question.
No, he doesn't say anything.
She walks up to him.
She almost falls on him.
And says these words, and then they are just like hanging out, and Columbo shows up.
And then Columbo shows up, and I think falls on her, and
And
then proceeds to basically tell the guy, hey,
well,
listen.
He gets pushed into her lap, but also she's into it.
Yeah.
she's like, this is great. I love having a random old man fall into
my lap. I mean, she did just
lap.
Say she tried open marriage, I guess.
I guess.
It's all weird. But it's so great. As crazy as that scene is, it's really great for just watching Columbo just scare the shit out of the guy. I wrote his name down, and it's going to bother me if I don't. George Campanella,
yes.
I think, is his last name. But just that he goes in and says, "Hey, just so you know, because I know, you know, your job's important to you and everything. If an accountant, like, finds impropriety and doesn't report it, they're an accessory and, you know, felony in your track record is probably not going to let you rise too far. So have a nice night." And then Columbo just bails. And it's incredible. It's just like, hey, I just wanted you to know, if you found out about anything and didn't report it, you're going to jail.
And then he says, have a nice night. And then Susie says, "Oh, you keep interesting company." And he's like, "I want to die."
Yeah.
It's just woo. Jeez, buddy.
0 to 60, but.
Yeah. And then the next scene is the where Jamie Lee Curtis,
Is there as the angry.
She's the waitress at the commissary at the office.
Yep.
Building, and Columbo comes in to find out from George who is stealing, but it turns out that it's been set up to make it look like Birdie was stealing.
Right.
So he tells Columbo that, and then gets the entire scene is hijacked by how much Jamie Lee Curtis just
hates Columbo for bringing in a half-eaten donut.
Yeah, but then she just like is so angry at him.
Yep.
For no reason.
It's all right. I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not the first person to be unreasonably mad at Columbo for
true.
Almost nothing.
That's very true. This is her third credited appearance in anything.
That's
Janet. She's the daughter of the forgotten lady murderer, Janet Lee, and Tony Curtis. Who was never in Columbo, as far as I know.
Well,
but
that's
he,
all right.
He could have been.
Could have.
Yes.
Would have been good.
It would have been good.
Yeah.
But
it's a... gosh, I'm trying to think of what... There went my brain. Hey, everybody. How's it going?
We should probably... I feel like a disclaimer that both Ben and I are on severe jet lag
now. We're both like super loopy, so...
Yes, we've both been involved in traveling for...
too long.
Too long. And so we're a little out of it this time. Full disclosure, I did fall asleep while watching this episode.
Yeah, but you'd seen it before.
I had seen it
before. I didn't fall asleep, so I have no excuse.
You have no excuse. That's true. And I should be rested, you know.
You should be, yeah. I
but
mean,
here we are.
But anyway, So the murder, like, I think the murder is really solid. I think Oliver Brandt is a really great foil for Columbo. I really enjoy their scenes together because he has that kind of like faux magnanimous kind of presentation, but he's
a lot of bravado.
So full of himself and his brain, and you know, and then like as stuff starts to kind of fall around him in his life, and he like he confesses to his wife that he's been embezzling, and she's basically like, I don't know what that means. I'm not part of your work life. I don't want to hear any more about it.
She's
it's like oh, embezzlement. You should know what that means.
She's
That's
like,
pretty,
don't worry about it. Yeah. Let's just go on a trip then.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually was the thing that blew my fucking mind. Is the first time that she shows up, like he comes home and it's after he's killed Birdie. And he's like, my best friend just died. And she's like, we need to take a trip. Because we need to not think about him. And it's like, oh, so I guess you just, grief is not a thing you do.
She seems pretty terrible.
I mean, so does he, to be fair.
Do you think that he's stealing to keep his wife in? Like, I guess that's kind of the implication.
That
right?
is literally what they insinuate, is that sort of tropey, like...
He's got to keep his wife in her
She buys
brand
all the
new
things
lingerie
and she spends all the money in the world, and that's why he started embezzling.
There's a lot of weird sexist shit in this episode, and now we need to address it. This is the point of the episode where we need to address it. Would say the first weird thing would be the secretary's thing. So all of the secretaries in this place are male.
Uh-huh.
Or some of them are. Well, for the senior partners, they have male secretaries.
Right. Well, so like there's a receptionist who is female. And after because Columbo comes in while the secretaries are like changing places. Basically, the one guy is clearing his desk out and the other guy shows up. And he's super angry. And then Columbo goes back out and says to her like, oh, so all the secretaries here are male?
No, what he says, it's worse than that. What he says is, what is this, women's lib? All the men are secretaries? And then she goes, oh, well, in this place, the senior partners have male secretaries because then the male secretaries can learn about the business and then they get promoted. And then Columbo says, and get real secretaries, right? And they're like, yeah. Women.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
She said something like, lady ones. And it's like, oh, are you fucking kidding me? And especially when he's like, what is this, some women's lib shit? Yeah. Yeah, when the women aren't even allowed to be secretaries, they're literally just answering the phones. That's women's lib?
Yeah.
Columbo.
I mean,
Columbo.
There was that previous episode where there was a female character who had a male secretary, and he like asked the male secretary if he was emasculated by working for a woman.
Yep.
So this is a well-established part of Columbo's character at this point. Thank
I know it's not
for
great.
That.
Speaking of well-established part of Columbo's character,
yes.
There's Caroline, who is one of the members of Sigma, who we find out is a 14-year-old
girl. She's the youngest one. She's has sort of a photographic memory.
Yep.
And
at one point when he's talking to her, he says something about
She gives him everybody's kind of got a piece of the puzzle.
Yep.
They've got a little bit of something. So somebody's like, it was the record player. And someone else was like, oh, it could have gone up the chimney, which is where he put the umbrella. So everybody's got kind of a little piece, but they
have the whole picture,
But it's also they're all elaborate murders.
Right.
They're all essentially thinking like Columbo writers.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of interesting because the writer sort of had to write like 8 solutions to it.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a clue thing.
But so Caroline has given her explanation, which is that the gunshots were on the record.
Right.
And so that they would have heard the sound of a record, but it was actually from the sound system, from the stereo.
Yes.
The sound of a record, the sound of gunshots. Oh, boy. And so Columbo says, thank you for that. You're a very smart young lady and a very pretty young lady.
And that's creepy enough. And then she goes.
And if that had just been happening, it would have been like, all right, that's a little weird, but okay, that's fine.
I know he's not hitting on her, but it's still not it's one of those things where it's like, Columbo, you don't know this.
Columbo, it's fine. Just let it go. And then the thing that she comes back with is, you know, that's the first time anyone ever complimented me on my body rather than my mind. And it's like, you're 14. Let's take a step back.
Let's pump the fucking brakes here.
Let's take a second here in 1970.
God damn it.
It's no good.
I fucking hate it.
I'm not a fan of that. And then you've got Susie. She's not great either.
No. Well,
it's
kind of a
sexist episode.
And
really.
Vivian, who is Oliver's wife, like, isn't great.
No.
Like, they're all like,
And the woman, I just read her name, the Mensa woman, fake Mensa woman, Sigma.
Yeah.
Vivian, she's also kind
of. No, Vivian's the wife.
Oh, Vivian's the wife.
Yeah, you said. Yeah.
Carolyn?
Yeah, I think
no,
so.
No, Carolyn was the young girl.
No, Carolyn's that one. There's the other one, I don't know, because she didn't come back and give us a theory.
Yeah.
But Carolyn and then...
there's another, and she's
Danziger.
At the bar, and then she's like, oh, my daddy's on the phone.
I've been trying to get...
It's weird.
It feels awful.
Yeah.
It feels awful because it's like, wait, these people are all supposed to be geniuses.
Right.
Why are you, like, kind of painting her...
I feel like a lot of the male characters are kind of fleshed out and all the women are not.
Are not really. At all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think you're...
And
I mean,
I think that's just kind of the fault of a lot of Columbo episodes.
Yeah.
But
not all of them. Because, Forgotten Lady is really
I mean, there
marvelous.
Are plenty that have had wonderful, interesting, you know,
but,
female characters. But not this episode.
But not this one. No, you're not... No, you got to know going into this one. Every single female character, like the way they are written, is gonna make you cringe if it doesn't just make you yell. It's bad. But the back and forth with Columbo and Brandt is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I think, the shining part of this.
And
I will say, like, pacing wise, it didn't feel like a slow episode to me. We got to the end and I was like, oh, okay. Like, rather than some other ones where I'm like constantly looking at my watch, like, oh boy, do we gotta again? Really?
Yeah.
We're still here? We're not fucking done yet? Come on. But this one had a pretty decent pace to it.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously it was a very good it's very well cast. Everybody's doing a good job even when they're not being told good things to do.
Right.
As is my catchphrase.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I think it's a very enjoyable episode. I'd say it's kind of middle the road, though, ultimately, because it's just kind of good performances don't really...
always fix bad writing.
Yeah, and
it's not to say that it's all bad
writing. It's not all bad writing, but it's pretty flat, and it's not... I don't know. It didn't really, like, capture me the way that...
I do enjoy The Catch, just because The Catch is literally...
Yeah, The Catch is maybe the best.
It's literally, like, Columbo slow-walking him to how he did it with the record and the squibs.
He's just, like, he's literally setting it up exactly, like...
Exactly the same way, but for one thing being wrong, and he gives him this theory basically to trip him off, and he takes the bait and just goes, no, of course it wouldn't work like that. Here's how it would work, you know, which is, of course, I mean, not the first time that he's had a catch like that.
No.
But in this case, it's real satisfying
And it really works, too, because he's definitely built this guy up as, like, his whole drive is about, like, being smarter than everyone.
Right.
That's, like, his entire thing is he's...
Yeah, I'm smarter than all these dummies that I'm in this smart club with. Yeah,
and he's very concerned about, like, relative intelligence.
Yeah.
And then, he gets a little denouement where he asks Columbo...
Basically to take an IQ test.
Yes, he just gives him a quick question, which I didn't even think was a very good question.
I think that question is written to make you go, oh, that was really clever.
Yeah.
And instead I just went, oh, that was real sweaty.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of seemed like you backed into the answer more than anything else.
That's our boy.
That's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
And then there's some
good fashion in this, I will say. Yeah? Well, I mean, so like Brant's three-piece windowpane suit is, I mean, again, you're always going to see 70s stuff, but it's a pretty sharp suit.
Yeah.
Danziger, who is the head of this chapter of Sigma, who is like the sort of quintessential, like, central casting nerd.
Right.
You know? There's a scene when he comes in to give his theory about Elastic and the gun and hiding it in the chimney flue and all of that. He's wearing this like super huge plaid. It's like I guess you would call it an exploded plaid, but it's like a super, you know, it's where rather than it being at normal scale, it is so enormous.
Oh, okay.
That like, you know, I guess that's an exploded plaid. I think that's what that's called? Yeah.
It's one of those ones that on an old TV would have made the TV freak out.
Oh, yeah.
Like the moire?
Yeah.
Whatever you call it.
I think it's moire.
It's definitely got that weird sort of pattern that made old televisions just flip their lid.
Yeah, it's like, this is an aside, but I remember watching Braveheart on a CRT, and the chainmail would do that.
Yeah, very similar. Yeah. Anything else? Any other fashion you want to highlight?
I mean, there's not anything that made me go, whoa, why is that crazy person wearing this?
I wish there was more Kenneth Mars in this episode.
That's fair. Because
he's so great, and he's such a natural, kind of wonderful presence, but he has almost nothing to do in this episode at all. He plays a welder.
Yeah.
Took a test and
it turns out he's smart.
Super smart, and he carries a pipe around with him.
Yeah,
that's just an affectation.
Yeah, I think it's like a meerschaum pipe, like one of those white pipes that, you know, color as you smoke them to remind you what your lungs look like on the inside. And he wears like this corduroy jacket and like, you know, jeans.
But he's just kind of like a, hey, I'm just a normal guy
I'm just
everybody.
A blue collar genius. Yeah. You know, is basically
and he's
that
got
character.
He did put a little East Coast on his accent.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I'm with you. I wish we got a little bit more of him.
Yeah. Because the idea of like a sort of blue collar-y guy who's like a member of the smart club. Literally he has in like three or four scenes.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, because he, again, like, for all the people who we see at the kind of start of this at the Sigma house.
Yeah, only a couple come back.
We only get, like, murder theories from two of them.
Yes.
And so I feel like those other characters are a little wasted. But at the same time, I don't
know. It would be interesting, I think, to have, like, Columbo, to play up that aspect more and have Columbo be... Yeah. The crime being solved by a bunch of amateur sleuths who are bad at it.
Right.
Like that, I think they could have played it a little more for laughs. Because it was kind of played sort of straight. It was played a little bit for laughs, but
mostly straight.
But mostly straight.
I mean, in both cases, like when Caroline and when Danziger come in and give their whole theory, they both say, oh, I didn't realize you'd already looked at this key thing that I just told you about.
I feel like that's a thing where like an ensemble sort of Clue-esque thing would have been fun. Like if everybody was gathered there and then everyone's sort of giving their ideas.
Okay, I guess what we're saying is...
If I was going to,
we like Clue.
Yes,
Clue is very good.
If I was going to script doctor this episode, I would keep it mostly the same. But here's what I would change. This is just my little thing. So, at the very end, you take all of these solutions. You have people kind of peppering in ideas,
right?
But then you have the Mensa Club be there with Columbo at the end, and they're
all giving out
the things. And then you have the guy there, the guy that Columbo is like, he's the genius. He figured this all out.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, well, then it just fall over. And then Columbo goes, you know, you're a genius. You do this. And then, you know, and it's like, oh, it's so simple. And then the guy goes,
and then Brant goes, no. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very good.
I feel like that's so much more, like, it gets everybody in. It kind of brings back that club. And then you can usher them out for the final scene.
I mean, it could have just been, hey, we don't want to pay those actors for more than one day of shoots.
Yeah, and
so
I think
get the fuck out of here.
They always want to do the one-on-one at the end, right? You know,
most of the time. Yeah. I think part of that is like a deliberate push away from sort of the classic, like, you know, Poirot and other sort of like,
I think that
everybody hang out in the parlor.
I think that would have been a good twist on that sort of thing.
I agree.
Which kind of the last salute to the Commodore kind of tried to do it directly.
Yeah. And
the twist was that it was just a normal mystery.
Uh-huh.
Because that's a twist to a Columbo. But, you know, having something that's a little more of like a twist on that where everyone's solving a crime incorrectly or something.
Yeah. It's a take on the trope.
Yeah.
Rather than just the trope.
The trope as a twist. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else, man. I'm completely out. It's going to be a short one this time.
It's not a bad way to end this season.
No, it's good. Next time, we're going to be viewing. Let me pull this up.
Columbo episode, I think.
Wait for quiet for the edit.
Yes.
So next time, it's going to be Try and Catch Me. Starring Ruth Gordon as the murderer. So that'll be in a couple weeks. We'll be doing that one.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
And then we're into the last season, the last three episodes of the 1970s run. And then, and then the nightmares come.
And then we just
and then
stop.
We go
no.
To Demon.
Are you excited about this, or are you a little nervous about?
Oh, actually, I am wrong again.
Ah.
There are six episodes next season.
Okay.
Oh, no, wait. Five.
17.
What is going
14,
on?
14.
Columbo.
Three.
This is the problem. So they had...
Seven?
They had six episodes last season, and then six episodes the season before that. This episode, season, three. Next season, five. The season after that...
One.
It's four.
Oh.
Season after that, six again. Then season 10, three. Season 11, three. Season 12, three. Season 13, the final season, five.
Oh. What?
Just, I don't know,
man.
Whatever.
Peter Falk was getting old.
They just made it up. The seasons are arbitrary. I don't understand why they're marked as the different seasons. I feel like it's just the DVD releases, maybe, because the final season... The final five.
Across like a decade, right?
It's the first one is in 1995. The last one is in 2003. I don't know how that could be considered to be a season, it is.
Nope.
So
that's not how that works.
They just made a bunch of TV movies at that point, but they wanted to make them all part of the same show.
Well, when you're doing a collection and there are seasons.
Yeah,
from
I mean,
before,
it makes sense from that perspective, but they weren't related in any meaningful way. So that's going to do it for this week. That's going to do it for this week. This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And one more thing.
Yeah?
I just put that dumb song in.
I'm so mad at you.
That's what's happening.
I'm so mad about this.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.